Our next guest is probably inundated with this kind of thing his whole life. Dr. Stephen Sinatra, maybe even related. Let's find out. Dr. Stephen Sinatra has a very, very impressive bio. He's one of the leading cardiologists in our state. He's written about, he's lectured about, he's spoken about various aspects of heart disease. And he has recently co-authored and published a paper on personalized nutrition for a COVID-19 era with the American Nutrition Association. He will be discussing the connection between the heart, lungs, and COVID-19. And Dr. Sinatra also, he practices in Manchester, Connecticut. He is a founder of different clinical practice, research, and study aspects, and the founder of the New England Heart Center, where he became known as one of America's top integrative cardiologists, combining conventional medical treatments for heart disease with complementary nutritional, anti-aging, and psychological therapies. We are, after all, a mind-body connection. Are we not, Dr. Sinatra? Welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today. Hi.
Oh, thanks so much. And it was really nice hearing Frank on that intro. That was sweet.
Yeah, and are you related?
Well, the library burned down in Sicily, and my grandfather and his father allegedly lived in the same town.
Really?
So we don't know. Oh, yeah. My father looked just like him, and, you know, when I saw him at Foxwoods and I saw him again in Hartford, I was amazed that a lot of similar mannerisms. It's unbelievable. But anyway, and all my kids are musicians, but it skipped me.
Yeah, I know what you mean, were you kidding, or did the library really burn down in Sicily?
No, it burned down, so the records were lost, but, you know, my grandfather and his father, they could have been brothers or at least first cousins, I can tell you that.
Sure.
You know,
yeah. And is Sinatra a shortened name, or was that the original Italian name?
That was the original name.
It's an unusual name, Sinatra, right? It's an unusual name.
It's only about, when we researched this about 20 years ago, there were only about 200 families in the world. It's not a very common name.
No, and it's not a typical Italian ending for a name.
Most of them,
right?
Most of them came from Sicily, to my knowledge. You know.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Anyway, I could talk about that forever. But so, Dr. Sinatra, hello. Hi, Dr. Sinatra. So you believe in the mind-body connection. You devoted your professional career to it. This morning I had a chance to read that piece on the Scientific American that seems to establish that in China, one out of five autopsy patients showed damage to the heart muscle as a result of COVID-19. And there are questions about whether cardiac arrest as an acute cause of death is related to the COVID-19 pneumonia, or whether or not there's something else going on with COVID-19 that's attacking the heart muscle itself. So tell us a little bit about what you think we actually know now about the relationship between COVID-19 and the heart.
Sure. I mean, what you said is true. I saw that little study coming out of China, and I have to tell you, I mean, I have practiced cardiology for decades, and I remember during flu-like illnesses or influenzas in the country, we saw a lot of cardiac cases because, the lungs and the heart are connected, and during these flu epidemics over the last 20 years, I can tell you, we were seeing patients on ventilators. And we see patients who would have a myocardial issue after they had the pneumonia or like a viral-like pneumonia or the influenza. And the same thing was reported in China. About 19% of over 400 patients came down with cardiac issues, meaning that the virus not only attacks the lung, but it can get inside the heart and cause heart damage. Now, the good news is in many of the cases I saw from influenza-induced, and the term is called myocarditis, inflammation of the heart, many of those cases had full recoveries, and I took care of a lot of these cases. We used nutritional supports. We used pharmaceutical meds. We did all the things that, conventional cardiologists do as well as alternative cardiologists, but we had a good rate of recovery. So I'm hoping that this is a very virulent virus. It's changing day by day. I mean, one of the good news about this virus is that I think it's causing less lethal situations because the virus is more prevalent than we think it is. I think it's it's a lot of it is being mixed with the SARS. I know I have a son in California. He's a naturopath, and his whole family had it months ago.
Really?
He was sick.
Months ago?
Yeah,
wow.
Because he was living in California, but it wasn't called, you know, coronavirus then. It was just a respiratory flu-like illness, you know. But it could have been around. I mean, don't know.
You don't know. And now, but now you're convinced as a family that it, in fact, was COVID. You think that that's what it was.
I think it was COVID, yeah. And, you know, it's. I mean, the virus can be more, you know, lethal to maybe older men. You know, it looks like age could be a factor. Women seem to be protected. Children seem to have, you know, an advantage. But this is going to strike anybody. I mean, that's the problem. It can hit anybody. And I think the most important thing with COVID is really fortify your immune system. Try to have the strongest immune system you could possibly have going forward, you know, in combating this illness.
So it's so interesting, Doctor. And we've got callers for you. And I promise if you're holding, we will get to the doctor. Hopefully, Dr. Sinatra, you have some time for us today. You know, it's interesting because I've been interviewing a range of fabulous doctors who have been promoting that. Dr. Christine Horner out of California, who's known for breast health, is all about the immune system. We had on a very well-known ophthalmologist last week who's devoting her practice to generally immune health, building up eye health, but generally speaking, the immune system. So I want to hear from you. What do you recommend? What is your recipe for a strong immune system?
Well, it can be lots of things. I mean, the easiest thing to start off with is diet. I think the worst thing you can do to your immune system is eat sugar. I'm sure your other doctors probably said that, but whenever you eat lots of sugar, and that can, you know, that's not just like cakes and pastries and candies, but it could be just carbohydrates, you know, a lot, you know, whether they're starchy carbohydrates and vegetables or breads or non-protein pastas or, you know, regular semolina pastas. But if you eat a lot of carbohydrates and put a lot of sugar in the body, and the average American puts in about 160 pounds a year, it's like devastating.
Oh.
And one of the worst
wow.
things you can do is sodas. You know, these sodas are just loaded with,
sodas are
you know, teaspoons of sugar.
Ugh.
But what sugar does is it depresses the immune system because it chokes off your white blood cell activity. We call that phagocytosis of white blood cells. So if the white blood cells are sort of sluggish, you know, they can't eradicate the bacteria or the viruses. So it's really important that we keep sugar to a minimum. I have to emphasize that. You know?
And, you know, I want to ask you about this, Dr. Sinatra, because I basically, of course, it comes down to me, right? I'm talking to you. I basically live on 3 to 4 fruits a day, but other than that, very, very few carbs. But every now and then, and this happened yesterday and the day before, I get a real craving for chocolate. It doesn't. I used to get it every day. That's gone. But
for chocolate?
Now and then. Yeah. What? What?
You said chocolate?
Chocolate. Every now and then, I just get like it comes into my brain like an amoeba. And it says, Lisa, you must have chocolate. You must have chocolate. And I will scrounge around and I will eat handfuls of semi-sweet chocolate chips if I can't get anything else to eat. And I have to have chocolate. What's that about? What's going on in my brain?
Well, obviously you're craving it. But I will tell you this. If you do a high polyphenol chocolate, like a cocoa chocolate that has, let's say, at least, let's say 80, 85, even 90% cocoa, this will support the immune system, despite the fact that you'll be getting some sugar. I mean, I love a very, very dark chocolate. I mean, it contains lots of polyphenol activity. It's interesting. Chocolate can reduce your blood pressure, but at the same time, it can be supportive of immune system health. But again, these chocolates have a lot of cocoa in it. And you know, a lot of antioxidant activity. If you white chocolate is horrible. I hope you never eat white chocolate because it's pure
never.
Sugar.
Gross.
Now you're
no,
eating semi-sweet, which is a little bit better than milk chocolate. It's much better than milk chocolate. But the darker the chocolate, Lisa, the better it is for you. So if you want to have a few pieces of dark chocolate every other day, it's okay with me.
It's okay with you. Interesting. All right,
okay
let's go
with
to
me.
All right. Let's go to Dawn from Norwalk, who has a question. We're talking with Dr. Stephen Sinatra about heart health. Go ahead, Dawn. Welcome to the show today. Hi.
How convenient that you're the doctor that would be the doctor of the day. So my husband is actually in the hospital. We thought
With COVID or?
Yeah. We thought he'd be coming home maybe today, but they changed their mind because now he has a heart thing. So they said his potassium is way up, which could cause a heart attack, which he's done flushes of that before, but it's not that bad. And they said he has a fungus that they're seeing with other COVID patients so he's wearing a heart monitor.
Yes.
To watch it. And so, like, I just talked to the doctor right before the show started.
Well, yeah. You know, maybe they saw something on his monitor. Maybe he had some arrhythmia, some skipped heartbeats, and they probably want to monitor him another day just to make sure.
He's on Bactrim, and they said until he's finished with the rest of the 21 days, they don't think they're going to let him go home.
Really?
Yeah. Because he's a kidney transplant patient, and so they're afraid that if
he's a transplant patient.
So they don't want to send him home, they said, because they're afraid of having him come back.
Right.
That they don't want him
I can understand
blood
that.
Work here and blood work for this and blood work for that. They want to just keep monitoring. So
it must be a nightmare for you.
I thought he was coming home.
Yeah, it's very hard.
I'm sorry, Dawn. I'm sorry.
It's a nightmare, but I mean, he's out of the ICU, correct? I mean, he's on the floor.
He's in a regular room.
He's in a regular room. Well, that's the blessing. The regular room is good, and he's away from, the machinery, the ventilators, the noise, and all that stuff. So, I know this is a nightmare, and the best thing you can do is cry. Just cry it out and feel your sadness, and just. That's all you can really do. And thanks so much for sharing your story. I think your story is so typical of what I've been hearing, and it's horrible. There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to homeschooling. And thanks so much for your story.
All right, sweetheart.
Bye-bye.
We'll pray for your husband.
Bye
honey. So, Dr. Sinatra, so let's talk about this. So this is a patient. I know he's got, a little bit different profile, but a lot of people have different profiles. And he was all set to go home, and something happened with his heart. What's going on?
Well, the thing is, he's also a transplant-type patient. So, in other words, he's immunosuppressed. So they want to watch him a little bit longer. And I suspect they're going to put a monitor on his heart and check him for skipped heartbeats or anything. But remember, this Chinese experience showing that even though you get past the pneumonia, see, the lung and the heart is so connected, with the same circulation. And basically, it's been my experience over the last few decades that when you get a flu-like illness or any influenza, it can involve the heart at the same time. And the worst thing is sending these patients home prematurely, especially if they have skipped heartbeats, because we don't want to have a skipped heartbeat be like a snowball going downhill, gaining momentum, which turns into an arrhythmia or even something worse, like a life-threatening situation. So I feel better that he is being monitored in the hospital, because if he does have any skipped heartbeats, they can do immediate things to help correct that. I mean, that's been my life for decades, in the ICU, CCU, and emergency room, treating some of these, arrhythmias, which can occur from infectious etiologies.
203-333-9422. We're chatting with Dr. Stephen Sinatra, one of the leading cardiologists in our state, if you've got a question or a comment. So my mom right now is back in AFib. She had heart failure a year ago. She's 85 now, otherwise in very good health. but she had this heart failure episode, and so they put her on Eliquis, which is a blood thinner, and they put her on this, I forgot the name, I should remember it. It's a very specific medicine to prevent stroke in AFib, because she has, you know. And she has been for the last year or more than a year very stable, as they've cut back on all of these dosages on medicine because she's been stable. But she, on Friday night, she passed out and fell and almost broke her face on the bathroom floor. It's horrible. You know, when you're on a blood thinner, doctor, it's even worse in terms of...
It's even worse, yeah. Any trauma like
manifest.
That can be devastating.
Right. Terrible. Thank God she didn't break anything, but, you know, her face is one big black and blue on both sides, cheeks, nose, everything. And now the doctors put everything back, and they are sending a heart monitor to her today. And what I want to talk about with you, because mommy may be listening, is how the heart heals. Can you tell us as a cardiologist, you know, some hopeful news? Because when people hear that the heart is damaged or the heart muscle isn't perfect, I don't know. I mean, I always tend to think, oh, that's it. It's over. It's the heart. But can the heart heal? And tell us a little bit about. Okay, talk to us.
Oh, yeah. Listen, the heart can heal. And the latest research on the heart, it keeps coming in yearly. But there was a paper that came out of the Scandinavian literature about 10 years ago. I'll never forget it. When I read this paper, I had joy. I mean, I had such joy, and my body was buzzing, because the essence of the paper was intrinsic stem cell renewal of the heart. Now, it means this. We're all born with what we call progenitor stem cells, and these stem cells can last into our 70s, 80s, and even early 90s. It's just amazing. But I have to tell you, Lisa, when I was a day-to-day cardiologist and I saw massive heart attacks in young people, and I've treated my youngest person was a 16-year-old girl with a massive MI, but I've treated loads of people in their late 20s, 30s, and 40s, and I've written lots of books on this. And I have to tell you, I was a coenzyme Q10 user for the last 40 years. It's a remarkable nutrient. It's vital for, you know, cardiovascular function.
Wait a minute. CoQ10? CoQ10?
Yeah. Oh,
you know, my Aunt Cookie told me I must start taking it, and I have to start taking it because a crease in my earlobe, in both of them, that I just noticed this winter, which I read about, is something called Frank's sign. And my doctor says that's a real thing, and he's sending me for a calcium workup and everything, and I'm young. But,
I mean, if you want to get a calcium scan in the heart, that's fine. That's fine. But but again, CoQ10 is
CoQ10.
So vital. And
really?
The interesting thing is I've had a lot of young children who needed heart transplants over the years, and now they're adults, and several of them have refused heart transplantation because the heart is an organ that can help to regenerate itself. And
really?
All you need to do is give it the raw materials. And I think CoQ10 is a remarkable raw material.
How much do I take? How much do you take a day? Tell me about this.
How
I'm
old
serious.
Are you?
59.
Can you share your age, or is that taboo?
Yeah, 59. I'm 59.
Oh, okay,
59.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So let's make you 60 and say,
okay.
I would say 100 milligrams of a good quality ubiquinone or a ubiquinol. Yeah, just 100 milligrams a day. That's all you need.
And how do I know what's a good quality? How do I know it's a good quality? How can I tell?
How can you tell?
Yeah, because online, you know, everybody in the whole world will sell you that they make the best one. How do I know?
Well, I don't want to sound like a salesman, but, I mean, I work with Healthy Directions. They're a vitamin mineral company. I've been with them for the last 27 years, and we've done a lot of our own independent research and published papers. And the most important thing about coenzyme Q10 is bioavailability. In other words, you want to make sure that it's being delivered to your tissues. In other words, when you take any vitamin or mineral for that matter, you want to make sure that the cellular uptake is very, very good. Because have you ever seen an oil float on a surface of water, for example?
Sure.
You know, like a gel cap, and you stir it in water and it doesn't dissolve. Well, sometimes some of these gel cap formulas do not dissolve in your plasma or your bloodstream. So you take vitamins in, and they go out. They're never absorbed. That's one of the problems with vitamin and mineral supplementation. But a high-quality ubiquinone, and we use a CoQ10 that's outstanding. I mean, we get really good blood levels with it. So, and again, I don't want to sound like a salesman, but, you know, we use Healthy Directions. The website is drsinatra.com. And I've been using CoQ10 for over 40 years. I can tell you, it's one of the...
Do you feel different when you use it, or you just know that it's working better on you, that you're, you know, if you were to have a look at your heart, that it's good? In other words, is there any manifestation that you actually feel well?
Yes, compromised people feel good after 2 to 3 weeks of taking CoQ10.
Really?
I mean, remarkably good, remarkably good. Asymptomatic people, healthy people... even healthy people will feel, they'll say to me, geez, I feel like I have more energy. I feel like I'm sharper. I feel like I can do more things, might have better stamina.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, CoQ10 is vitally important, especially in this day and age. I think it's the most important nutrient to take.
And I cut you off about your age. So what is your age and what is the dosage for your age?
I'm 73, and okay. I take about a couple of 100 milligrams a day. I take about 150 to 200 milligrams a day.
All right, Dr. Sinatra.
Good quality CoQ10.
All right, we've got one caller, and then I think I'm going to have to reschedule you to come back on the show because
that's
I just
fine,
love talking
I have
with
another
you.
Show in about 20 minutes anyway, so that's fine.
All right, let's go to Krell from Bridgeport with the last word. Krell, hi, quickly. Sorry, I monopolized the doctor. Go ahead, Krell.
Oh, okay. Hi, Lisa. Hi, Dr.
Hi.
Sinatra.
Hi.
I saw you at a lecture many, many years ago that was put on by a health store. It was in a big auditorium. I was very impressed with you, especially the fact that you went, you know, you were gutsy and you said that, you know, statins work because they're anti-inflammatory, not because they get rid of cholesterol. But that's beside the point because we're talking about COVID tonight. I know you talked about sugar. That's beginner stuff. What is your impression about silver and ozone in getting rid of COVID?
Well, I mean, are you talking about colloidal silver? Or
colloidal or stabilized is the new one.
Yeah. You know, I've been involved with the colloidal silvers for years. I mean, I've met some of the original researchers. I like the colloidal silvers. In fact, I take them myself. I mean, I think it's a great preparation to use in any infectious process. I mean, a lot of my colleagues, my conventional doctor colleagues, would probably be in disbelief about hearing me talk about it. But I've used colloidal silver in my own patients, and I've taken it myself, and I like it.
What about the new one, the stabilized silver?
I don't know about the stabilized silver. I don't know if it would work in COVID-19. I mean, I don't have any direct experience with it, but I would suspect it would.
You know, or worried about, you know, silver being, you know, harmful and being, you know, turning blue and all that baloney. You would say it's relatively safe?
Yeah, I mean, I've used colloidal silver on myself. In fact, even I just used it this morning on a topical wound.
Can I ask what dosage is? What's your dosage?
I use drops, maybe 20 drops, you know, and I take it intranasally.
All right. Dr. Sinatra, Krell, thank you very much for being on the show. The music tells us we're out. I appreciate having you on, Dr. Sinatra. We'll have you back on again. Dr. Steven Sinatra on the Lisa Wexler Show, coming up 11 o'clock. And joining us now is Bob Husky, who made history last time around in basically chewing. Would that be the right word? The normal, formal nominating process for Republicans, and instead going directly to the people, gathering thousands of signatures, petitioning to get on a primary and winning the primary, becoming, in fact, the endorsed Republican nominee in an open seat against Governor Ned Lamont. And Mr. Stefanowski did not win, but it was an exciting campaign. And he joins us now to tell us a little bit about what he's been up to, the way in which I know he's been contributing in an effort to raise money and resources to help fight this pandemic. Hello, Bob, and welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. How are you today?
I'm great, Lisa. Thanks so much for having me on.
It's a pleasure. Let me just announce the number in case anybody wants to say hi. 203-333-9422. So, Bob Stefanowski, I saw it passed upon my radar. You have to give me the details. I think it was last week or a week ago that you helped raise, or maybe you personally donated millions of dollars towards, was it PPE? What were you involved with?
Yeah, and can you hear me okay, Lisa?
Yes, I can hear you okay. Fine. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Great. Yeah, so about 3 weeks ago, we were able to source some of the surgical masks that first responders need, nurses, doctors, rest homes. We were hearing stories of nurses, at the end of the day, taking these masks that are supposed to be disposable, putting them in a paper bag, putting their name on it, and using them for a week. So we were fortunate enough to find a source down in New Jersey. We came back with 100,000 masks. We had them inspected and make sure they were legitimate. And it's turned into a full-time occupation. By the end of this week, we will have distributed 1 million masks. The charity is called maskforct.org. And we teamed up with the Jewish Federation of Greater New Haven. They've been terrific partners. And this thing has taken a life of its own. And we're very proud of what we've done.
That's fantastic. And it looks like not only healthcare workers need it, but all of us need it, Bob, because now nobody's supposed to go out in public without a mask.
Well, today we're up at the XL in Hartford, and we're giving away 50,000 masks. And we've got bags with five masks in each. People are driving up. We throw them in the back window. And they drive
nice.
Away. We were supposed to start it at 7 a.m. Lee said the first car started lining up at 4:30 a.m. There's been a half a mile traffic jam. People, I think it's safety for people. They don't feel safe. And these surgical masks are very important to them.
So you got there early this morning. The Hartford XL, is that an arena stadium? What is that?
I'm sorry, it's not the... It's not the XL. It's the, I'm looking behind me, the Xfinity Theater here in Hartford.
Oh, yeah. Yep, I know the Xfinity Theater. And so people are literally lining up, and you're volunteering with a group of people, and you're just giving them masks. That's so nice.
Yeah, we've got 250 volunteers. It's been nonstop traffic. We're on track to deliver 10,000 bags of masks with five masks in each. We're also handing out a little hand sanitizer. We've got another event coming up on Friday that I'd love to plug if you would let me.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
On Friday, May 1st, we're going to be at the Naugatuck Valley Community College. That's in Waterbury from 7 to 1, and we're going to bring another 10,000 bags of masks. And people are just really, really grateful to get them, Lisa. Makes them feel safe.
Well, not only makes them feel safe, it's now required attire. I mean, who are we kidding? If you have to get to a bus, you got to do any mass transportation. These masks are very, we ordered a box of surgical masks about 3 weeks ago. It cost $80, Bob, and 50 masks, $80, a lot of money. And it took 3 weeks. I mean, I have the luxury of being able to set aside $80 for one box of masks. I'm grateful for that. How many people have that luxury? It's a lot of money.
Not a lot. I think they're selling them at a Home Depot, but it's $50, a dollar a mask.
Right?
We source them in bulk. I drive my truck down to Brooklyn. We come back with 100,000 masks. We've distributed them in 150 of 169 cities. We've gone to 300 nursing homes. We've got a great network where we're getting them out there, and it's been a big help, I think, to people.
And how did this fund? Did you give some money towards this initially? Are you buying this from Brooklyn manufacturers? Tell me a little bit about the supply chain here. How did you get this done?
Yeah, most of these come in from China, so you need to be very, very careful. We've got the head of procurement at a major hospital here in Connecticut. We make sure they're FDA approved. It's hard for the government to do because the brokers, they want cash or they want a wire, and mm-hmm. they don't want to wait for forms. They don't want to wait 2 weeks to get paid. So you got to get in your truck, you got to go down, you got to inspect it, then you got to wire the money, and you got to come back with it. So a lot of these brokers have stores on shore, but the supply chain has been tough. You know, when you got to wait for something to come from China, it takes a while. So we've been fortunate. We've got a lot of corporate sponsors. Webster Bank is sponsoring the one at Waterbury. Our sponsor today is Pratt & Whitney. And we've had a lot of donations. If people want to donate, they can go on Masks4CT.org. And, you know, for as little as a donation of 75 cents, you can get a mask. And a lot of people are looking to help. And so we would really appreciate people's support.
So you're not seeing, even with this effort, you're not seeing enough in terms of volume that, you know, garment centers in Manhattan, Brooklyn, whatever, are rejiggering? Because I know there are a lot of home seamstresses right now making masks, and they're doing it in the dozens, sometimes in the 50s and the hundreds, not in the millions. Are you seeing anything in the supply chain of American manufacturing yet that's coming to volume?
You know, I haven't. I call brokers all the time. I've got a network of 5 or 6 brokers. We would prefer to buy American if we could, but I just haven't been able to see it. You know, it is kind of unique that where the virus started, the masks are coming from there for the most part, but that's pretty much what everybody's using. I know Governor Lamont put in a big order in China for masks. So I don't really, it's a great question, Lisa. I don't understand why there's not more supply of these masks coming from the U.S., at least to Connecticut.
Yeah, I you know, maybe because they're doing the face shields and the ventilators and other things that are further up, maybe on the sort of the unique kind of thing that we need that we also can't get from elsewhere. I don't know the answer, but if masks become the ubiquitous attire in the next year or two or more, we will inevitably have companies here that start to do them and hopefully do them well and cheaply. We have to.
It's interesting. Some of these manufacturers doing like masks with your favorite football team on it,
or
made to order masks. I mean, it's interesting. It's kind of like the tragedy on 9/11. This is going to change how people live for a long time. I don't know that it's ever going to be the same.
Oh, I think people will ultimately, whenever ever is, we will revert. I mean, you know, maybe we'll always wash our hands more. Maybe those of us who live through this generation until generations are born that don't remember, because every human generation has to reinvent the wheel. Maybe those of us who are scarred by living through this will never wash our hands the same way again. But, you know, it's the human condition to forget. It's what we do. We do it really well, Bob Stefanowski.
No, you're probably right. I'll tell you, it's surreal here. I'm in my truck as I'm talking, and 250 volunteers in masks, people driving up, they're waiting in traffic for an hour to get a bag with 5 masks. It's like surreal that this could happen in our country. It's absolutely surreal. But I really do feel like this charity has done a great thing for people.
I'm really happy to hear it. Is your family well? Everybody in your group okay?
They are. I've got 3 daughters, and, you know, it's been nice to be with them. After 4 weeks, the tempers can flare a little bit. But it's been great to be around the family, and we're just hoping everybody stays safe. It does look like the trends, at least in hospitalizations, are finally starting to head in the right direction.
Yes.
Where we
see
the biggest issue, Lisa, is the nursing homes. We still get calls from nursing homes that people going into a high-risk situation, they're just still not adequately supplied with this PPE, so we're trying to fill that gap wherever we can.
Well, that's good, because the unions are very, very distraught about it, and they feel like the physical inspections didn't really happen enough, and they basically feel like they're the forgotten, unprotected frontline workers in this. So it's a very real thing.
There's a lot of people that need them. You know, we've given some to the state marshals that are driving inmates around. We've given a real lot to the prisons who didn't have them. You know, people that are, you know, working 24 hours delivering prescription drugs. You kind of forget how many people go into high-risk situations and really need some level of protection.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the prisons are another place that we haven't really spent enough time talking about on our show, but I keep seeing stories every single day of corrections officers and their families and prisoners and their families, you know, and the problem is that the public at large, their sympathy for prisoners, whether it's on a good or a bad day, is just never that high. And that's just the human condition. It's a terrible thing to say, because a lot of people are in prison for nonviolent crimes. I would venture to say a lot of people are in prison because they're poor, in the sense that if they'd had a good defense attorney, they wouldn't even be in prison, not to say that they didn't do it or whatever it is they're accused of. But it just doesn't get the same level of public sympathy. It just never does, and it never will.
No, I mean, people are people, and you need to do what you can to protect them. We dropped, I think it was 2,000 off at the Bridgeport Correctional Facility. They were so happy the warden came out and met us at the door. And, you know, we're not, we're trying to give them that everybody that needs them. And we're going to keep pumping them out. We're going to keep pumping them out till this crisis goes away.
Well, I'm glad that you are. Is there anything? We're chatting with Bob Stefanowski, 203-333-9422. You know, is there anything you'd like to say about the leadership of Governor Lamont with respect to this crisis?
Yeah, I don't think it's time for partisanship. You know, I think some things were done well and probably others weren't. But I will say, in fairness, nobody anticipated this kind of tragedy, both at a national level and a state level. It's unprecedented times. And one thing we've really gone out of our way for, Lisa, on this charity is not to be partisan. The first week, Amy and I tried to keep it private. We didn't even want to be known. And then a reporter at the New Haven Register got a hold of the story and published it. So then we decided we would set up a foundation and we would, you know, use our leverage to raise money and we'd come public with it. But this is not a partisan issue, this virus, certainly.
I agree, and I think that the overwhelming amount of public is relieved and happy that at least here in the state of Connecticut, we have not been throwing those kind of, you know, mud balls at each other, Republicans or Democrats. I think it's been, frankly, a very healthy thing to see everybody working together. So this organization is called MaskForCT.org. Can you tell us just one more time, Bob Stefanowski, about Friday? If people don't have masks, you said, number one, they could line up to give a donation, in effect buying themselves a mask, which is very nice, for 75 cents. But the other thing they could do is maybe on Friday, tell us a little bit more about the next event.
Yeah, so what we'll do is you drive up. There's absolutely no charge. There'll be a bag that we throw in the back of your car. It's got 5 surgical masks, and we've got a little hand sanitizer. It's Friday, this Friday, May 1st, from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m., and it's at the Naugatuck Valley Community College in Waterbury. Our sponsor is Webster Bank in Waterbury. They've been kind enough to give a big donation to this, and we're going to have 10,000 bags, first come, first serve. I think we're going to make it today in Hartford without running out, but as I said, people who are lined up. The first person showed up at 4:30 this morning, for a 7 o'clock start, and it's been nonstop cars all morning.
I believe it. Well, thank you, Bob Stefanowski. It's good to talk to you. My best to Amy and the family. Stay well, and thank you for your contribution during this time of pandemic. Thank you for stepping up to the plate and being part of the solution. I appreciate it. We all do.
Well, it's great to talk to you, Lisa. Thank you. Stay safe, okay?
You too. Thank you. Bob Stefanowski on the Lisa Wexler Show. We'll be right back.